The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. You can also donate to the podcast by going to CanadaEHX.com and clicking donate. I do this as my full-time job, and every dollar you give helps keep it all going. You can also listen to my other podcasts, From John to Justin and Pucks and Cups. Chances are you've seen an episode of Corner Gas. Maybe you watched it during its original run, or perhaps you watched the movie, or maybe you're watching Corner Gas animated right now. Either way, you most likely know who Sergeant Quinton Davis is. Played by actor Lorne Cardinal, he was my favorite character on the show. But Lorne Cardinal is more than just Sergeant Davis, the police officer we all love. He played multiple roles on Canada, A People's History. He was also the first Indigenous student to ever graduate with a BFA degree in acting from the University of Alberta, which he did in 1993. And he was the first Indigenous person to play for the Edmonton Druids back when they were known as the Strathcona Druids rugby team. But on top of that, he's created a production company with his wife, Monique, called Through and Through. He's acted in numerous things, north of 60, many stage productions, and most recently in a reoccurring role on FBI Most Wanted. I had the pleasure of talking with Lorne all about these things, what he's up to, what's coming up, and more. So let's get right to it. But before I get to the interview, I also want to say happy birthday, Lorne, because this episode comes out on his birthday, January 6th. How have you been over the past year with COVID and lockdowns and all of that?
We've been doing all right. We've been hunkered down here in Squamish. My wife, Monique Parteau, has been busy putting the bones of our production company together. So when everything lifts, we'll hit the ground running, getting a slate of ideas and slate of projects together. And yeah, putting on the bones of the company and all that fun business stuff.
Tell me a bit about the company.
It's called Through and Through Films. Through the long way and then through and through the short way. So it's we're international co-productions is what we're focusing on, and so we offer our skills as producers and writers, directors, and that kind of business and executive producers. Thanks, executive producing.
Nice.
Yeah, we can send you a link if you want to afterwards.
Yeah, that would be great. Absolutely.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, and I guess the next question is in regards to, and I hope I pronounce it correctly, were you surprised to get the August, is it Schellenberg Award?
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess kind of a surprise to get that. Were you quite shocked when they let you know?
Yeah, it was a very nice surprise. I was good friends with Augie and Joan and the family. So it was quite an honor to receive that recognition, and just joining, you know, the previous winners who've been involved with it before. So, you know, it's a very personal, a high point in my career, being, you know, getting an award named after Augie is just incredibly special. So. Quite thrilled.
Was there any kind of, like, I guess it's kind of hard with COVID, was there any kind of ceremony, or did they kind of just send
no,
it to
it was
you in
all
the mail?
Virtual,
or...
right?
Okay.
They did. They sent it to me in the mail, but we did a virtual a videoed acceptance speech, and they let me know by email, and then did a panel for Imaginative. Mm-hmm. So I did a panel on there, And then they sent it in the mail, and we've just been spreading the word via social media.
Nice. And so season 3 of Corner Gas Animated just finished a couple weeks ago, I think. So in regards to that, is it a bit of an adjustment to portray Davis from live action to voice acting?
It is, because voice acting requires different set of skills. So you have to be really conscious that you're telling the story with your voice. So where we're recording, we actually add physicality to our delivery to help with the sound and stuff. So it's a bit of a shift that way, but he's always a fun character to play. He's very, you know, he's just trying to plug into that that Davis switch that I got somewhere hidden in all the wiring.
Is it a bit difficult with COVID? Because I've seen pictures before where you guys are all together, mostly kind of interacting with each other. But with COVID, obviously, we can't really do that. So is it a bit
It was a lot more fun when before COVID, because it was nice to be in the studio with everybody. We had a lot of laughs, and we'd be doing a lot of goofing around, and they'd be going, okay, let's go. Oh yeah, right. Yeah, we got to go to work now. But you know, so I miss hanging out with those, with my favorite people. And so yeah, making the adjustment, it's just a little more of a challenge, because I can hear, you know, we do it basically four people at a time. So sometimes I get through all my scenes with Tara, and I hear her in Toronto, and Eric in Toronto, and Brent's in the other studio down the hall, and then that's about it. And then we wait, and then it's all scheduling now. The challenge of scheduling, and then other people come in and they clean up the studio before you go in. So there's a bit of a time gap to hang out, and so it is. I'm glad we're still doing it, but yeah, the COVID has certainly put a kink into it.
Are you looking forward to doing a season four with how successful it has been over the past three seasons?
Yeah, I could keep doing the show for as long as people want. I mean, it's so much fun, and the writers are doing an incredible job, and the animators at Smiley Guy Studios are a brilliant bunch of people, and they're just adding more to the characters that we've developed over the 6 years plus movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great show. I've loved it since I first started watching.
No, it's
years
fun.
Ago.
COVID has really put a dent in things, because I was doing another show called FBI Most Wanted. Mm-hmm. Down in, it's a Dick Wolf show, and I've got a recurring role in that, and I did season two, beginning of season two. I went down to New York to film, and the protocols were pretty, it was pretty intense, because I had to go through three airports to get there. So that was a bit nerve-wracking. It was nice to see that most of the airports were kind of empty, so not attacked as usual. So that was comforting. And, you know, Air Canada does a great job with their protocols and making sure everyone's masked up and gloved up. And so that was exciting. And then onset protocols are quite stringent down there as well. I think they are everywhere, but Dick Wolf and their company certainly took it an extra a mile. So I was like, I've been tested there so much while I was waiting to work, mm-hmm. twice a day. And, you know, before you show up on set, before you even get out of the van, you get a temperature reading, and then you get taken to a rapid COVID place and get tested there. And then if you're clear, then you're taken into set with two people per van. So there's a big 15-seater van, and there's only the driver and two other actors max. Mm-hmm. So the distance keeping us apart from each other is it's the hard thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, nobody wants to spread this virus, so we're all abiding by it. And when you get to set, there's pod areas. You belong in pod A. You can't go visit people in pod B or pod C. You have to stay within your pod. So you know, and we have COVID police walking around to make sure everyone's abiding by the rules.
Jeez,
it's work. I mean, it's work, because mm-hmm. you know, we can't mess around. This virus is we can definitely stomp down the spread of it if everyone just adhered to wearing a mask, washing your hands, keeping social distance. You know, basic, non-intrusive mm-hmm. exercise. And I don't know why people resist. I mean, it's personal freedom is not a good enough. Personal freedom doesn't give you the freedom to infringe on my health, Absolutely. Threaten my health or my family's health. So.
It boggles the mind why.
Yeah, people would get the message. We could be in a much better shape than we are right now. Instead of watching numbers go up, we could be watching them flatten out. Would be awesome.
Without a doubt. In regards to FBI Most Wanted, like in Canada, obviously, everybody knows you as Sergeant Davis, but you also have a habit of popping up in things like we had mentioned before with Canada People's History. And then I was watching Fargo and suddenly you're getting your teeth worked on by Billy Bob Thornton. But is it a kind of a change to do something with somebody like Dick Wolf and a serious show like that, that is so far removed from the character of Davis?
I love it. That's what I look for. I go look for those challenges, change of paces, because I can, you know, you can only play Davis for so long before it's like, okay, I need more depth. I need to flex my acting muscles more than playing Davis. I mean, he's great. He's fun, but he's two-dimensional character. So, you know, the challenge is bringing life and making him believable in his two-dimensional world, because he doesn't have a lot of depth. We don't have a long, big back history that, you know, for him and stuff. We never see his family come up and visit him and that kind of stuff. So, Dick, I didn't audition for the Dick Wolf show. They just reached out to me after they saw my body of work, as Jonathan Strauss said. They saw their body of work and they just offered me the role because they didn't want me to audition for a one-line character. They said, we'd just rather give it to you. We didn't want to, you know, insult you by asking you to audition. I went, oh, that's so weird. That's so American. That's awesome. If that was more here in Canada, we'd be working all the time. But, you know, that's the sad thing about the state of acting in this country and in Canada is, you know, Eric Peterson and Corinne Coslow, they go through the same thing. You know, they're masters at the craft and then they go to the audition room with people who are just starting and stuff. So it's a bit of a slap in the face for all the work and body of work that you have behind you, you know, 30-year career in various medias, and then you get relegated to being treated like you're just beginning and you have to prove yourself to some what behind the ears producer who just came in, you know? So it's a bit insulting and hard, but that's Canada.
Yeah.
You know, we don't like to have a star system.
So this year has been kind of a big year in terms of honors. You got the award, but then also actually I'm just outside of Edmonton, and at the Roxy Theater in Edmonton the Black Box Theater is being named after you.
Yeah that's another huge honor. You know, my friend Bradley Moss and I, we went to university together, and we did a lot of work at this theater that he's running, the Roxy Theater Network. And that was my haven, because I would do a season of Corner Gas and then me and Brad would put in plans and let's do this show. So it would fall between. So right after I would, you know, do Davis and then I would go do Sam Shepard, Drew West, you know, total flip of a character and more. So it was very interesting because I remember the first scene in Sam Shepard's Drew West. I don't know if you know the play, but two brothers, and one's a writer and the other guy's a drifter, you know, a dangerous drifter kind of dude, and that's who I was playing. And I knew we had this opening scene. He said, and then you just and then we'd be waiting, and I'd wait in rehearsal, and then Brad would say, okay, you know, you come in right now. I said, no, well, I said I will, but I know this is what we have to do. You have to give me a chance to set up my character, because the audience won't go along with me when they first see me. They're going to see me and they're going to go, oh, there's Davis. Oh, there's Davis. So I had to take that first few minutes of just pacing around, you know, downing a bit, crashing it, just getting, and then look at glare at the audience. So they go, okay, that's not Davis. That's not somebody I want to mess with. Is that? And then they would be in for the ride, you know, and then they'd enjoy the rest of the show. And I had people come up afterwards and say, no, I like you better as Davis. You know, but that's where my joy is playing a diverse range of characters and always looking for that challenge, always looking for people who can push me and stretch me and I can learn off of them, you know. Mm-hmm. That's why my wife and I, when we're in our production company, our focus is to work with veterans, industry veterans who've been around. So it brings our game up as well. So, you know, and we're totally capable and waiting to get into that international co-pros and, you know, those kind of things.
In regards to Davis, a little while ago, I did an interview with Jackson Davies, and I asked him about playing Constable John. And it's kind of similar to Sergeant Davis, where it's kind of a, not a goofy character, but it's kind of, I guess, what has the response been from the RCMP to your character? Because, you know, you don't portray him as the super serious due south character. He's kind of a, you know, a sweetheart, a goofy character, but with a heart of gold. Has their response to it been pretty good?
It's been awesome. That was my first concern in the first season, was I didn't want to seem like I was disgracing the RCMP or the police officers, because they do an incredible job and, you know, a highly dangerous job. So I, you know, respect what they do and have empathy for their jobs and the things that they face every day. And so that's what I didn't want. I didn't want to seem insulting to them and their job and their members. And after the first season, I was directing an episode of Rabbit Fall in Saskatoon, and I stay in my hotel, and this guy comes saddling up to me, and he's like dressed like a biker. He's got a vest on and stuff. And I'm looking over, and he gives me the old up and down, and goes, "Oh yeah." And I went, "Oh, I think he recognizes me." So I say hello, and he goes, you're that guy on that show, right?" And I go, "Yep, I am that guy on that show." And he goes, "Oh, I just want to let you know that I'm the chief of police of this, I forget the town he named." And I said, "Oh yeah." And he goes, "I just want to let you know that really like your job. You did really good. You remind me of a lot of the members I work with." So, you know, they gave me the seal of approval. And actually, one of the storylines when I accidentally tased myself, mm-hmm, in the hand, security, yep, cam, I think it was called. Yep. And I was in Jasper, driving through Jasper, and I stopped, and all of a sudden I see this cop car crawling by, an RC cop car. And then it turns around and comes up and whipping up to me. And I'm going like, "Uh-oh, now what?" And the guy rolls down his window and goes, "Hey, Davis." I go, "Yeah." He goes, "You know this guy here?" He's shooting, thumbing at his partner, and his partner just hangs his head and starts shaking his head. He goes, "Yeah, he tased himself like you did on that show." And I went, "Oh, nice." So it was based in reality. You know, I thought I made it up, but apparently the young guy, in training, he reloaded before it was fully discharged. So he still had a charge. He's loading up the pads on the thing, and he tased himself. So the members got a good laugh at that. And yeah, I was in Beaver Lodge, Alberta, doing a school tour there, talking to kids. And I rounded the corner, and there were like six cops in the hallway. And I immediately flattened myself against the wall. Oh, what's going on? and they all came just to hear me speak and talk and stuff and to meet me. So I shook their hands, took pictures, and, you know, because I have nothing but respect for the job that they do. So It was nice of them to come out, and they all love Davis. So mission accomplished. I didn't, you know, be disgrace or insulting in my portrayal of them. So it was awesome.
Nice.
And I've hung out with, you know, Paul Gross and I, when we did a thing in 2005, the centennial, when the Queen came, mm-hmm, to Edmonton, and we're at the Commonwealth Stadium, and Paul and I were co-hosting the event and introducing all the acts and stuff. And as we were doing our rehearsal, we heard behind us this thundering thing. We look behind, it's all the RC guys on doing the RCMP charge on their horses, right? So, of course, my genetic memory kicked in, and I ran. I was like, "What the hell?" So I got the hell out of the way. And then they came by later and going, "Oh, yeah, they're, you know," and they came and they kind of pushed past Paul Gross and went, "Hey, Davis." And I went, "Oh, new cop in town," right? And so he's like, "Oh, they usually come after me." So it's good.
So. That's awesome. In regards to your work this past year, like you said, FBI's Most Wanted, Corner Gas Animated, do you feel like this year especially we're seeing the importance of the arts, whether it's TV, movies, theater, things like that, to kind of get us through tough times like this?
Well, I think the TV is helping us out a lot in that regards of getting people to watch and escape, but it's also making it very difficult for us to work as artists. Mm-hmm. The theater community has taken a hard hit because we have to be together to work together. And it's hard to do a show when you're in a bubble. I've done a couple of Zoom play readings, and it's, you know, it's interesting exploring the new media, but it's totally not the same. It's hard to get eye to eye contact when you have to look at a camera lens as opposed to a person, you know, and so it's missing a gap. So that's the big challenge. And but it is nice, because the medium of TV and audiobooks are helping people get through this time, and reruns. People are watching a lot of the Corner Gas reruns, the action, live action, and the movie. And so that's awesome. And the other show that I do is Molly of Denali, which is a PBS show, which won a Peabody last year for its show for youth programming. So, you know, and those shows, especially Molly, I really love, because it's helping kids ask questions that their parents have to answer. Like this one episode with some of the characters, we're talking about our ancestors, and we're talking to little Molly about her ancestors so she can understand. And I was told this story, this couple down in Texas were watching the show. And then after the show was done, their little daughter came up and said, "Mom, Dad, do we have ancestors?" And it's like, oh man, that's awesome. So they're forced to answer that and talk to their kids about their family history and connecting on that level, you know. And I love, you know, that's the purpose of this medium, is to get people to interact, not just to dull the mind, but to cause conversation, to cause reaction, to cause interaction. So it's, you know, it's wonderful when that happens, when you're allowed to do that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that is meant to dull your mind. But there is some stuff that out there that makes you enjoy. Like the Corner Gas, I love the fact that grandparents and grandkids can watch the show together, and they can laugh together. And just laughing together is good medicine.
Absolutely.
That brings a family unit closer together when you're able to laugh with each other.
Do you prefer live action to voice acting, or do you like equal both, or do they both have kind of their benefits and disadvantages?
Yeah, they both have their benefits. I love them both. They both require a different set of skills. So we're always shifting gears and fine tuning when I go from to doing an animated to doing an audiobook, which I've done a few lately. And it's a big challenge talking for 4 hours at a time and trying to keep people involved auditorily. So there's a challenge there. You have to have some physical stamina to keep the pace at a certain pace, and you know, the pitch not too high, not too low. You know, you can't dull people to sleep. You have to keep them focused on the story and keep trying to draw them in and keep them listening, you know. So that's a big challenge, and I love doing that, because I love challenges and exercising my other skills that I have. And I love directing as well. I mean, everything has its charm, I would say, because I love directing. I love working with actors. I love working with up and coming actors, and learning lots from older veteran actors, and learning lots from the crew. You know, working with guys who have been like a DOP for 40 years, you can learn a thing or two from those guys who've seen it all and done it all. And if you want to learn, ask them questions, you know, and they'll go, oh, okay. You know, so that's what I love doing, is just getting in that environment. And it harkens back to my rugby days when I played for the Strathcona Druids. It was my first team I played with. And those rugby skills I've taken with me into on stage and directing as well. Because when you're directing, the director is the team captain. The buck stops here, and it's up to me to keep everyone focused and heading in the same directions, putting out fires as they come up, and trying to draw out performances from these, you know, from the actors. You can hear it in the microphone when they're telling the truth and when they're not. And that's what I listen for. I go, oh, okay, let's try that again, but let's try it with a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know?
And then just my last question is, what do you got coming up for 2021? It's kind of hard to say with COVID, you know, everything's up in the air, but any projects, you mentioned Through and Through, but anything coming up next year?
I think I've talked my way into a couple of shows at Stratford. So I'm hoping that'll work out. That's on my bucket list of things to do. is to work at Stratford, because it's one of the, you know, premier Shakespeare mm-hmm. festivals in our country. So I'd love to work there. So I phoned up the artistic director and said, hey, I'm Lone Cardinal, and this is my you know, as I do this. And they go, oh, no, we've heard of you. We know who you are. And they're like, oh, good. Well, I want to come play. I said, oh, okay. Well, that'd be awesome. And so I said, we're doing a couple of plays, and here's some options that you're going to do one or the other. And because of COVID too, the Stratford's taken a big hit because they weren't mm-hmm. able to produce a season. And so they're, when they're up and running again, they're going to do a season, but it's going to be under a tent outside of their theaters that they have there. And it's going to be limited seating, because, you know, it'd be socially distant seating. So maybe 100 people under the big top. So that's going to be, that harkens back to the beginning of Stratford when they did it under the big top, when it started in 1964 or whatever it was, mm-hmm. 64, 67, I think they started. And they did all their shows before they had the theaters. They did them in big top tents out on the grounds there. So it's going to be a new beginning. We're going to start again. And then hopefully by then the vaccine will be more readily available, and we'll be able to, be together again in an audience, on stage and in the audience. So mm-hmm. I look forward to those days, because it's very symbiotic. You can't have a great play without an audience.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
Because they play a part in all the productions that we, you know, all the stage productions that we do. You need an audience to make things work. Mm-hmm. That's who we do it for. So
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Lauren Cardinal. If you did, please leave a rating and review. If you want to reach me, you can. Just email craig@canadaehx.com. You can also visit my website, where you'll find hundreds of articles on Canada's history, as well as all my podcast episodes. Just go to canadaehx.com. And again, you can support the podcast by going to Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/canadaehx, just like all of these wonderful patrons have. And I apologize if I mispronounce any names. Nick Zinri, Pamela Elder, Shannon Marshall, Clinton Martinez, Dimitri Chauve, Aaron O'Hara Myers, Robert Dunseith, Todd Casey, Catherine Rawa, Luke Guess, Vic Hedges, JP Bear, Jason Hall, Phil Maynard, Spencer M., and Iris Gray. If you like, you can reach me on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/CanadianHistoryX. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is Craig Baird, CraigBaird. And I'm on Instagram. Just search for Bairdo37. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.